Tom told me he wasn't going to say the company's new name, so I understand. We'll go with that. I want to acknowledge some of the co-authors on this paper. This is actually largely done by three undergraduate students, Emily Campbell, Shane Evans, and Alton Campbell, along with good friends Neil Hansen and Brian Hopkins. And this is really a part of a larger study. Shane is actually here. I saw him somewhere. Where are you, Shane? There you are. Shane's got a poster on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's see, 338-1313, I think. So if you want to know the bigger picture, go there. I'm going to just focus in on a smaller picture. It was great. I assume introduced this quite well, that understanding something about our soil, particularly particle size distribution, soil type, hydraulic properties, these are all critical pieces to really getting an understanding and picture of how water will move in soil. It's also important, it's been mentioned this morning as well, mechanical properties and stability for geotechnical engineering, that's all ties together in this, in what we would call a soil moisture release curve. Now, traditionally, these are only done in the laboratory. On the one side, we have measuring soil water potential. Let's see if I can get a mouse up. So we have dry area with a chilled mirror dew point technique. In the wet range, we have this Wind-Schindler technique, gives us our soil water potential. At the same time, we get soil water content out of something like this using the gravimetric method, and we can produce a nice soil moisture release curve to give us some information about our soil. Now, the question is, could we add more information, more granularity to this much desired moisture release curve by generating moisture release curves in the field? Now, I spent a little time looking out in the literature, and I thought there'd be a lot more of this, and all I could come up with was just one or two studies out there, and then some good friends, I think Wolfgang Dernert over in Germany did this, did co-locating sensors in the soil, and generally, at least the literature that we can find on it didn't work very well, and it was really a limited range when it did work. So the question is, can we do better? And the reason I thought about attempting this is that really one of the limitations to the study so far have been tensiometers, which are the most accurate way to measure soil water potential. But we all know that they have this limitation where at about negative 80 kPa, they stop working. And with the maintenance, et cetera, we really don't produce these nice moisture release curves in situ. But recently we've been able to calibrate a little bit better a solid matrix equilibration device shown here. And we did a bunch of these together, about 30 of them. We got a plus or minus 10% accuracy compared to that tensiometer. And we said, okay, let's see if we can take this to the field. And now that we can have some confidence in the accuracy of our device, can we have some confidence to make these moisture release curves in the field? So as I said, this is a part of a larger study. So this is the turfgrass turf lab there at Brigham Young University. This is the north plot and the south plot here. These are engineered soils. It's kind of small. I just stuck this in this morning. I didn't have this information earlier. The south plot is a sandy loam here. The north plot is just a straight sand, loamy sand. And these are engineered soils, again, they're actually trucked in, mixed, and then put in place, and then we grow turf grass on top of these. These are really important soils because the north plot is something we're using on the BYU football grounds, and so performance there is really critical, as many of you understand. So the project goals overall were to try to get some idea of a failure warning system to let us know when there may be a problem, so the turf doesn't end up looking like this on the south plot, that when the irrigation, for whatever reason, human error, stopped it working, it turned brown, and that's a problem. The other thing we wanted to do was understand how we might optimize irrigation water, because, as I'm sure you know, in the western United States, water is a critical thing, and trying to make sure we optimize that water use is very, very important. And so we decided to install sensors out there. So this is the solid matrix water potential sensor along with a water content sensor. We buried them at 6 centimeters, together at 15 centimeters, And then we just buried a water content sensor down at 25 centimeters. We did an analysis that showed the root zone was really around 0 to 15 centimeters. This is engineered soil. The base is a native soil, a clay loam, and that we may see a little perched water down there with that bottom sensor. Here's just our installation. We stuck them into the side of a small trench that we dug. So I just want to quickly show you some data. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but this is the soil moisture time series from last summer, and kind of give you a vision for exactly what we were doing. So this was actually done by one of the students. He called it moisture. Let's say that's water content. This is at 6 and 15 centimeters here. This is the probe down at 25 centimeters. These are all water content. Up here we can see the water potential sensors. Those are over on this axis. And we can see the trending of the water potential over time. So I want to draw your attention there to the three circles. The first part we just left on a calendar irrigation time series. So that was just whatever the turf grass was being irrigated with when we installed it and run with. Here we had some custom dry downs where we didn't want to get the plants too much under stress, but we wanted to see what happened if we could change this irrigation here such that the water that was at 25 centimeters that we were kind of assuming was the water that was washing down through and not available to the roots. We wanted to keep this relatively flat in here. And then finally, we did a couple of dry downs you see over here where we actually took the water all the way down till the plant water use essentially stopped and to see what happened at that point. So again, if you want to know more about what happened to the plants, go see that poster on Wednesday afternoon. But here, looking at the soil, what we did was I had Alton Campbell, one of the co-authors, he put together this lab data from this Wind-Schindler technique of getting the moisture release curve with this field data that I just showed you. So these are the raw field data. We just took them in. We actually removed any wetting events because it turns out that the solid matrix sensors don't respond like the water content sensors, so our water potential would lag behind. And so we removed most of them. You can see a few of them still in there. And then we simply took this whole chunk of data, squished it all together, and made this right here. So these are the data that came out of this curve. This was at the 6-centimeter sensor. And so we see some interesting things here. We know if we're looking at water content on the y-axis and matrix potential on the x-axis. I think we missed a minus sign there. That should be a minus sign in there. What we see is actually really good comparison between the two. You'll notice there's not a lot of points with the Wind-Schindler technique. That's uses tensiometers inside this, so they dry out and they stop, and this is the air entry potential of the tensiometer over here. But in general, we see a very good or very similar curves here. You'll notice on this side, these don't match up very well. That's actually a sensor issue. The solid matrix sensor air entry point is about negative 9 kPa, so it can't actually go all the way up to zero here on the upper end of this axis. So let's look a little bit at what we found on some of the other plots. So this is the southeast plot at 6 centimeters. So we, in both the plots, in the north plot and the south plot, we put two different installations. So we're going to compare those. Here's at 6 centimeters and 15 centimeters, and we did individual Wind-Schindler analyses, lab analyses of these moisture release curves. So we got pretty good agreement here, not so good here, but we can see a definite relationship in the curve. Let's see. There we go. Yep. So this is the same plot in the south. We got good agreement here and not so good over here. Now, one of the things that I was wondering about is why are we not getting some of this good agreement? And some of it is down to maybe some true disagreement between the lab and the field, but some is maybe the ability to understand how to actually run these Wind-Schindler techniques in the lab. This I saw first of all. The students brought it to me, and I said, okay, we're not actually doing anything that's helpful here. Those are way apart. And so we started talking, how are we going to do this? Maybe this will not work. And they came back and said, oh, by the way, we did sieve that sample and repack it. Is that a problem? And I said, yeah, that's a problem. Because this is a sandy soil. It's a loamy sand. And most of what's really creating some of this down here is really the organic matter in the soil. So you just took it all out, and then we don't have it anymore. So that sample is actually running right now in the lab at BYU we were talking about last week. So I'm hopeful to see some similarity here when we get that back and publish this. So just to give you a feel for some what's going on here, so this is the south plot right here, the lighter colored dots. This is the north plot and the darker colored dots. And one thing that we can start to see is, hey, there's some real detail to this moisture release curve that looks important. So the water is coming, the soil is drying down here on the north plot, and we turn this corner from water to no water very, very quickly. While this on the south plot just slowly turns the corner, slowly for a sandy loam anyway, or for that kind of soil. And what we see is some interesting behavior in the soil. So the south plot, these both have been dried for 1 week. This is what happens to the south plot. We do see some drying out here, but we do see have plenty of greenness. This is the north plot, same conditions, and the water's gone, and the soil dries out. The soil dried out, but the turf went into dormancy there. So we start to understand a little bit how a moisture release curve could really inform our understanding of the behavior of that soil and what might happen in terms of irrigation and how we might irrigate it better. Now, another thing I did was say, well, does this really fit? These are with some of our conventional ideas of these moisture release curves. So here's Campbell and Shiozawa, just a simple moisture release curve model here for sandy loam, loamy sand, and silt loam. So I've graphed them over here, and what we can see, I showed you the soil types going in. This is the loamy sand, and we said this was a loamy sand. And, you know, if we squint a little bit, it looks rather similar. These are engineered soils again, so do have a little more fines, which is probably why it's kind of jumping out that way. Here's the other sandy loam. And if we squint a little bit, you know, falling similar. Now, of course, these are just model data from Campbell and Shiozawa, so we wouldn't expect them to be anywhere near bang on, but at least we're kind of seeing some interesting things there. How do the co-located sensors agree in the same site? So this is the northwest plot at 5 and 15 centimeters, and they do agree quite well. This is an engineered soil again, so we'd expect that, and we are seeing that. So, in conclusion, there appears to be some interesting things here. It's not a home run yet, but maybe we can do a better job. We can do a job in the field of collecting these moisture release data and add them to our laboratory data together, and that's pretty cool. We can also indicate soil type, maybe hydraulic properties from this. That's pretty exciting. But before you ask me a lot of questions about why I only did this in the sand, I can say that, number one, I've always thought that most of soil physics was done in sand anyway and in the lab, so don't argue with me. It's history. And number two, we're trying to do this out in other types of soils. We actually had an experiment in the silt loam, and I talked to the students about it. It was a failure. We're still working on that. So still working, improving the upper range on the right-hand side there of the sensors. So with that, I'll take any questions. Sure. So do I think that the differences made in the lab and field may be due to soil porosity? It's certainly so. Yeah, matching up the densities, trying to get that in the lab and the field. There are a lot of these pieces like organic matter density, that may be causing these issues. So yes, and that's kind of part of where we'd like to go. This is an unexpected aspect of this experiment that came out, and we're still learning on it. So yeah, great question. Right.
And the other measurement contains a lot of woods.
Right.
And then maybe you measure also the water content.
how am I going to say that now, over Naphtali? So roots, no roots, absolutely. The question is whether or not roots may be at the heart of this, and you know, in this, there are no roots in the sensor. That, you know, how do we get the actively growing roots back to the lab and do anything with them? Yeah, for sure. So I would say what this is just kind of tapping the tires, see if we can do this, because it's certainly something that I think in the future we may learn a lot from if we have the sensors to measure it. So yes, but I don't know.
So you're thinking about combined sensor in the future?
So we have one. So we can talk more about that.